This is Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the music and the artists behind the 2017 season of the Aspen Music Festival and School and previews upcoming performances. I'm Chris Moore. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival and School, and can be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. Funding for Festival Showcase comes from the Barnard Fain Foundation. One of the most anticipated concerts of the Aspen Music Festival is that of Grammy Award-winning guitarist Sharon Isbin. She sells out Harris Concert Hall every year, which is one reason why we at Aspen Public Radio will be doing a live broadcast of her concert this Saturday at 8 p.m. I talked with Sharon about her concert, her new album, and her thoughts on coping with the world we live in these days. Well, Sharon Isbin, welcome back to Aspen. I happen to notice that an old recording that we have from 1997 on EMI has you playing Bach on it with the Aspen Music Festival. So you've been around a while here. Tell us a little bit about why you keep coming back to Aspen, for starters.
Well, I was a student back in the late 70s and fell in love with the place. Yes, Oscar Gilia was my teacher. He created the guitar department. And when the department ended for a good 8 years, along with many other programs at the festival, I was asked then to restart it in 1993. So it's been a joy to return here in the capacity as the faculty and the founding faculty for this new generation of the department. We have students from all over the world, really wonderful, talented people. They have their own recital the last Thursday of the festival, and that'll be 6 p.m. at Scanlon.
That's 17th, I think, of August?
Yes. And my concert is August 5, so there are lots of ones in between at Anderson Ranch with the students and also the Aspen Art Museum. So there's a great service to the community. And in fact, all my classes, my 9 master classes, they're all from 12 to 3 at the Friedman Atrium on campus. Those are all free and open to the public. So people can come and just sit and listen any amount of time that they want during the 3 hours and really get a backstage view of what goes on.
So you briefly mentioned the Art Museum concert, and that's a beautiful setting. You look out and you can see Red Mountain and everything.
Right.
And that's free, I believe.
It's
a free
concert.
And do you have a date for that?
Yes, my students, some of the top students, are performing there August 15th. It's 6 p.m. at the Aspen Art Museum. And the Anderson Ranch concert is August 9th at 5 p.m.
And then you have August 17th at 6 p.m. They're going to be very busy these last 2 weeks of the festival.
That's right. And all of these are free shows for the public.
Your concerts, every year, I wonder if your concert is going to be an incubator for something great. Just a couple years ago, I think it was, you and Isabel Leonard did some beautiful performances together, guitar and a Latin American art song. And now you made a recording, you've traveled all over the country with her. Tell us a little bit about why you chose Aspen to be the incubator for that project and perhaps other projects.
It was funny because I didn't learn until this year in an interview that I read that was done with both me and Isabel separately how this whole project started. And it turns out it was Isabel's idea. She wanted to work with me and wanted to work with guitar. We're both managed by Columbia Artists, and her manager met with Asador. It must have been 2013. And suggested the idea of us performing together. And bless his heart, Asador said yes. Isabel had been a student here, and this was the first of our many, many concerts that we've been doing. So that was 2014, August. We've since been playing venues like Carnegie Hall, where they commissioned a new work for us for their 125th anniversary. We played sold-out concerts as well at the Kennedy Center, and really all over the country. And it's been a joy now to release our CD of all Spanish art song. It's actually the first time in 40 years that this kind of project with Spanish songs, including guitar, has come to the fore. And it includes 12 world premiere arrangements of mine as well. So there's music by García Lorca, Manuel de Falla, Monsalvache, Joaquin Rodrigo, and Agustin Lara, and then some guitar solos as well by Tárrega and Granados, who celebrates a big anniversary this year himself.
Well, Emerson once said, in every work of genius, we see our own rejected thoughts. And when I first saw that it's been 40 years since anybody's come out with a guitar, Spanish, and Latin American art song recital on record.
By a major Spanish-speaking singer.
How obvious is that, and how could that have been missed for 40 years? I mean, these songs are so beautiful. They're
absolutely
so evocative. They're so lyrical.
Part of the problem was that the arrangements, for example, of the Garcia Lorca just weren't so great. So Isabel and I sat down to rehearse, and in that process would try different things. She would say, look, this is what the lyrics are saying here. Can you do some kind of a strummy effect that expresses this? And here it needs to be really soft. So together, in understanding what she wanted to communicate as the singer, I was able to create different approaches for the guitar part. There's one place, for example, in a song where a young man goes out in search of a wife. Instead, he finds his long-lost sister and comes back. And the final lyrics of that, she is speaking, and I go into a very upper octave to suggest that voice of Rosina. So it's really important that the collaboration be one that is very much in sync with the lyrics and the meaning of the songs.
Your audience back in 2014, because I was there, was so quiet. One of the quietest audiences I've ever heard. And I wonder if you get that a lot as you travel. These songs, I think, almost hypnotize people or something.
Well, they're fascinated by them, and they're fascinated by the combination of the intimacy of guitar as opposed to something louder like the piano that really brings you as if you're in the living room. And that's what we really wanted to do in this album called Alma Española, Spanish Soul, that just came out a couple of weeks ago. So you can get it on iTunes, Amazon, at the major stores in town that sell CDs anymore. Certainly it's available easily online. And it'll be also at my concert on August 5.
The concert that you're doing on August 5, maybe you can tell us about this. You have a premiere here, I believe, and you also have some kind of small orchestra. There is a conductor for this concert.
Yes, and it will be a program that features three different works for guitar and orchestra, and one of them is by Howard Shore from the film The Departed, a work that he wrote for me called Billy's Theme, which is very expressive of the Leonardo DiCaprio character as he is having various flashbacks in the film. But this is really an insight into his sensitivity of his soul. It's very beautiful and lyrical. And then I follow with a work that was written for me that I premiered, gave the world premiere of, with Elizabeth Schulz conducting her Maryland Symphony Orchestra. This was just a couple of years ago. And it's by Chris Brubeck, the son of Dave Brubeck. It's called Affinity for Guitar and Orchestra. It celebrates his father using a beautiful theme in the slower section that his father had composed, a ballad. And it also celebrates the jazz and Middle Eastern idioms that are very much a part of Chris Brubeck's life as a jazz musician. It's been super successful. I just did a number of performances this year, including with Leonard Slatkin and the Detroit Symphony. So I'm thrilled to bring it for its first performance in Aspen on the 5th. And then after intermission, I do the beloved Concierto de Aranjuez by Joaquin Rodrigo, one of the most famous works, not only for guitar and orchestra, but really any instrument. And it was a joy to have known Rodrigo.
Yes, that must have been an honor. You knew Segovia, some of the great figures of guitar in the 20th century. Are people in your youth that your lives crossed?
I was fortunate to have contact with Rodrigo when I was competing in Queen Sofia competition. He heard my performance with the orchestra as a winner and contacted me and invited me to his home, and I met both him and his wife. And in fact, the song that his wife Victoria pegged in 1988 is one that Isabel and I recorded called Aranjuez Ma Pensée on our Alma Española album. And it's a setting that Victoria, Joaquin Rodrigo's wife, did in celebration of their many years together. She had a close call when he was writing that piece. She lost what would have been their first child. She became very ill herself. She did recover. They went on to have many, many decades together. But there's a very nostalgic and really intense, impassioned feeling about that particular piece. And you'll hear that in the slow movement with the orchestra.
Many people have almost certainly heard that movement if they've heard nothing else.
Right.
Do you see this concert as a possible incubator for something in the future, another album down the road or another concert tour or something like that?
Well, I certainly plan to record in the future, hopefully in the next year, the Brubeck Concerto. And the idea would be to record that with Elizabeth Schulz, who did the world premiere and the Maryland Symphony.
I almost wish Elizabeth could conduct that one piece with you, because I know, I imagine she'll be here in Aspen.
She will be here, yes. So, absolutely.
So at least you can wave and say hello to the original conductor, because she's here. So that's going to be exciting. I wanted to ask you just one kind of easy technical question about the guitar, I guess. And that's about how you create the illusion of legato. I was just talking to Jean-Yves Thibaudet, and he launched into that on the piano, which is a percussion instrument. And yet, He says there's no such thing as legato, but of course pianists do that all the time. They create that illusion. How do you create that illusion? You must, because some of the music you play is so lyrical.
Well, one of the things I learned certainly when working with Rosalind Turk for 10 years on Baroque performance practice, and particularly the music of Bach, setting that for guitar, was how she evolved a technique of crossing fingers under each other to create that overlapping sound between the different keys. And what we do on the guitar, we can create a similar effect with different strings that overlap and dovetail for a moment, creating the illusion of legato. The other way to do it is to pull off with one of the fingers of the left hand. So either way, you have to have great control in the right hand so that when you touch the string to produce the sound, you do it with an immediacy. So there's no time that is squandered between notes where you're resting your finger on the string and stopping the vibration. It has to be an immediate, smooth transition to create that legato. And that's one of the hardest things to teach. And I certainly focus on that with my students. And I think it's one of the greatest challenges on an instrument that requires a different activity for each note. Whereas in the violin, you can pull the bow and continue moving your left hand fingers, or a singer just transitions from one note to another. They don't have to articulate, but we do. So creating that illusion of legato is key to making the instrument sing and be lyrical.
And I would especially expect with things like these Spanish love songs on Alma Española. I mean, my goodness, that album has such heart in it, and the songs are so expressive. And to do that, you have to have that kind of technique, I would think.
Absolutely, because the guitar fulfills all things at once: the harmony, the rhythm, and the melody in any context that it chooses. All of those things have to be really developed to their capacity. And it was such a joy working with and continuing to work with Isabel, because she's a marvelous artist, has a magnificent voice. I'm sure people know her from the Met Opera broadcasts. And she's also, like me, won a couple of Grammys. So we really come to this as equals and wanting to share extraordinarily beautiful music with people.
Now, changing the subject to a picture I saw on, I think it was a Facebook post. And there you are, your smiling face right between Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld.
Like, well, we just did a benefit last month at the Kennedy Center, a sold-out show that was a benefit for the David Lynch Foundation, which brings transcendental meditation, which I've practiced for many decades, as has Jerry Seinfeld, as has Jay Leno. It brings transcendental meditation for free to underserved communities. And in this case, it was for 10,000 vets and at-risk youth in the D.C. area. It was amazing to be sandwiched in between hugging Jay Leno on one side and Jerry Seinfeld on the other. Their performance at the benefit was extraordinary. I probably have permanent smile lines as a result of that experience. It was just such a fun evening. Ben Folds performed as well, and Kesha. It's great to be able to contribute back to a community that has given me so much. Transcendental meditation is something I've practiced since I was 17 years old. It's a very simple technique. You learn in 5 2-hour sessions and you're set for life. You can get checked for free anytime thereafter in any city that has a center. And if you learn it, you give yourself the advantage of an amazing technique for stress release so that you can really focus on your inner creativity and your inner goals without the constant pollution, really, of stress. It's also like recharging your battery. If you've gone through a day and very productively, you've done your 20 minutes in the morning of meditation, and then you're ready for your 20 minutes in the afternoon, it can be so rejuvenating. It's like giving you twice as much energy in a whole other day. And it's also a great way to cope with a lot of stress that we face every day. I mean, God knows, you look at the news and there's one more horrible bit of information after another as our beautiful democracy is being picked apart and destroyed day by day. And you don't want to succumb to that. You want to be invigorated to resist and to really fight for what's right and fight for what we believe in, which is a democracy. And even though those in government right now don't believe in that, we have to carry forth the torch.
It is a difficult time. I think of transcendental meditation, of course, sometimes people think that's just about passivity or just sort of accepting the world just as
not
it is,
all,
no matter what.
I mean, you go to sleep every night, right?
Right.
And if you didn't go to sleep, you would die. You would, you know, you wouldn't be able to function. Your body needs rest. So this is, unlike mindful meditation, this is a form of meditation which actually puts the body at rest. It has been able to lower blood pressure in people who have high blood pressure, get them off meds so they don't need that anymore. People who are suicidal, who are post-traumatic stress, returning veterans, battered women's shelters, all of these kinds of people who are dealing with major amounts of challenges, many have been able to get off their meds, no longer be suicidal. The David Lynch Foundation has brought Transcendental Meditation to over 500,000 inner city school kids and taught them this. And as a result, they have seen that the scholastic rates go way up and the violence rates go way down in these schools. The kids are so grateful to have a chance to really become who they are. It's not at all about passivity. It's about really charging your battery, getting stress out of the way so that you can focus on being who you are.
Sharon, I'm always so grateful for all the things that we share here on the air and off. I'm looking forward to your concert, which actually will be broadcasting live right here on Aspen Public Radio.
That's right.
So looking forward to hearing that and seeing more of you and your students over the rest of the season.
Yes, and I'm so proud that this year one of my students, who, by the way, was taught Transcendental Meditation at Juilliard by the New York group there a couple of years ago, he just won the most important classical guitar competition in the entire world, the Guitar Foundation of America. This was last month. His name is Tengwei Zan. He was a student here in Aspen for one of my summers. He's been my student now for 5 years at Juilliard. He's one more year with me getting his master's degree. As a result, the season after next, he'll have a 50-concert tour throughout the United States and other places in Europe and do a recording for Naxos. So I'm very proud of him. I'm proud of Aspen and all the wonderful donors here who have made it possible for my students and other students at the festival to have scholarships. And I'm grateful for the scholarship in my name that was started on my 25th anniversary here. So feel free to donate to that and help these kids. They're really wonderful, and you perform a great service.
Thank you, Sharon. If you've just joined us, this is Festival Showcase, and we've been talking with Grammy Award-winning guitarist Sharon Isbin, who will be joined by a chamber orchestra conducted by Scott Terrell and music of Howard Shore, Chris Brubeck, and Joaquin Rodrigo this Saturday, August 5th at 8 p.m. Now, if you can't get tickets to this sellout event, you can listen to a live broadcast right here on Aspen Public Radio. Next, we'll talk with percussionist Jonathan Haas, whose percussion ensemble concert August 7th at 6 p.m. will feature the largest array of instruments from around the world of any concert this season. Jonathan Haas talked with me to give us an idea of what to expect that evening. I noticed the first thing on your program is a work of Steve Reich, who is one of the early minimalists and has done post-minimalist music as well. I have noticed that sometimes musicians complain about minimalism because they have to do so much counting, but counting is all you do as a percussionist. Much more, I think, even than a violinist. They're not used to 600 repetitions, or they're not used to long pauses and that sort of thing. Do you feel that there's a kind of a natural connection between minimalist composers and you as a percussionist and your colleagues?
Absolutely. And as I tell, when people say, what do you do for a living? I tell them I count.
Right.
Usually up to four a whole lot of times.
Right.
And they laugh and I go, no, I'm really serious. That's what I really do. And we also can do very, very complicated equations within that because of the complexity of the music. Steve Reich is a percussionist. So it's a natural. And the minimalist movement is very attractive to percussionists in particular because it was percussion instruments that were used to both demonstrate and to memorialize this type of music using mallet percussion, using marimba, vibraphone, and xylophone. And that's what Steve chose as the main instruments in his ensemble.
So you have four musicians playing four different mallet instruments for this first piece, it sounds like.
Right. So the mallet quartet is for two marimbas and two vibraphones. That's it. And by the time the piece is over, it sounds like you've listened to a symphony orchestra, but there's only four instruments on stage.
I can imagine. Tan Dun is a much more contemplative composer, I guess you might say. Can you say a little bit about the piece he's going to be doing, the elegy?
First of all, I have a personal connection because I went on tour with him with this particular piece. My advisor was the cello soloist, and we did, I think we did maybe 12 performances of this. And whenever you work with the composer, Tan Dun conducted, you get a real close association with the piece. And this is an enormously beautiful piece because the cello is balanced with a very large percussion ensemble of six players, and his ability to both personify the Chinese music experience, because this is where he came from, along with a very modern vernacular in terms of his vocabulary and his use of percussion, is really extraordinary.
You also have a string quartet playing with you, is that correct?
We have a string quartet, and this is the beginning of a new repertoire. And Augusta Reed Thomas has written what is considered the most formidable piece for percussion quartet and string quartet. Where the connection is that percussion quartet, four percussionists playing full-on recitals, concerts, concerti, is a fairly new art form. And it's really become, this has become one of the number one things that young percussionists want to do with their lives. They're forming percussion quartets all over the world, very much like their string quartets. So what a perfect combination of bringing both of those different instrumental groups together for a piece. And Augusta Reed Thomas has really got us off to a great start with this type of repertoire.
I have to wonder, with the string quartet, of course, they can play very percussively, if asked, and I imagine that some of the percussion instruments can play kind of a faux legato, if asked. Does she take advantage of that, the back and forth like that?
Chris, that's exactly what she's done, is that she's made everybody trade places. Okay, string quartet, you are now a percussion ensemble, and yo, percussion ensemble, you are all now to play like a string quartet.
And I just made that as a guess, I have to tell you.
your guess was spot on. And that's really what makes this both so much fun, and it's a very, very valuable experience for our students, because this is going to be the first time that they've ever played with such an ensemble like this. And it takes deep listening, great concentration, and the end result is music that nobody's heard before quite this way.
I have to say, I look forward to that. My last question actually just has to do with if your ear has changed or evolved. I guess you won't mind saying, you know, we're both about the same age. I'm in my early 60s. And so after all these years, has your taste and what your ear enjoys hearing in the realm of percussion changed? Has it softened a bit, or do you still love a great bang fest sometimes too?
You can't be a percussionist if you don't like the rumble in the jungle,
I'll tell
you that. But my taste has changed. It's evolved. It needs to, because I teach a lot.
Right.
I teach at New York University at NYU. I'm ahead of the percussion program. I teach at the Juilliard Pre-College with younger kids, and then I've been coming out here for 33 years. You have to keep up with the next generation, and you have to keep inspiring them, and as a result, they inspire you, the teacher. So I'm in this wonderful loop of always learning about new things that I never knew existed.
And didn't exist until last year.
Exactly. And that always gets my creative juices going. I mean, I love that part of teaching and performing.
It's so wonderful to have you here year after year at the Aspen Music Festival and school. You've become such a fixture, and I think you've done a lot to be an ambassador for percussion instruments, especially for people who might be a little skeptical or kind of, oh my God, am I going to get bashed out of the, are my ears going to get bashed? But your concerts actually have a really nice blend, I think, of different kinds of approaches to percussion.
I greatly appreciate that. And taking the paint off the walls sonically, that's fun, but that's as far from the objective of what we're doing. Our concerts at Harris Hall, which is such a wonderful gem for percussion ensemble, this is one of the best places to play. We have sold out audiences because we make a connection. The music makes a connection to the people, to our audience members. Our students really make that connection for themselves, and when they see a concert hall of people, most of the time just astonished that there's so much music that can be played, that in and of itself is a wonderful symbiotic relationship that inspires our students to continue and to become the professionals that they become.
Well, I have to tell you, sometimes I go to these concerts, and it's a percussion concert, but after a while, it's a concert, and I'm hearing music. And I think that may be a good goal to aspire to, is that whatever instrument you're playing on, to have the audience just be taken by the power of that music.
Exactly. And also the tremendous subtleties. One piece that we didn't talk about, which was George Crumb's The Appalachian Songs, is one of the masterpieces of the repertoire, because percussion instruments are used so often softly and with different types of techniques and sounds that unless you saw what was going on, you would have no idea how the sounds were created. And all of this is an accompaniment to a wonderful vocal part. They're songs from the Civil War, and they're set to a percussion ensemble with a piano in it, by the way, that's amplified. Piano is a percussion instrument. Sorry, pianists, but you'll just have
you'll
make your peace with that. And that in itself is another extraordinary piece that demonstrates the tremendous breadth and dynamic contrast that percussion instruments have.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for all your work, and thank you for coming to Aspen Public Radio again.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
We've been talking with percussionist Jonathan Haas, who leads the percussion ensemble concert Monday, August 7th at 6 p.m. at Harris Concert Hall. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the music and the artists behind the 2017 season of the Aspen Music Festival and School and previews upcoming performances. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival and School, and can be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. Please join me Tuesdays at 3:30 or the rebroadcast Saturdays at 3 for more interviews. My name is Chris Moore. Thanks for listening.